Hey, y'all, and welcome to Empowered AF with me, Joe Thomas. Today, you're going to hear an interview that Julie Lee, my pelvic floor therapist, and I did a couple months back on pelvic floor therapy, PCOS, and just all the advantages that I think women really need to hear about that just are not talked enough about after birth, before birth, and really just that women have no idea the advantages of pelvic floor therapy, even issues that are affecting our sex life, our libido, and a lot of issues that come up around PCOS and things that doctors are just not giving us true answers on. So I hope that when you listen to this interview today, it gives you some genuine insight on just some steps you can take if you're dealing with any issues related to the pelvic floor, related to PCOS, related to your libido, related to laughing when you pee, or just any issues related to the fun region down there, periods, cramping, or any of the above. So sit back, enjoy the conversation. And I truly know y'all are going to be blown away by the knowledge you get from Julie Lee, because she has truly, truly impacted my life by receiving pelvic floor therapy from her and just giving me so much knowledge by teaching me about my body and how much my pelvic floor connects to the rest of my body. So as always, thank you for listening to this podcast, and I hope you also are able to gain so much insight from this conversation. Introduce yourself. Tell us what pelvic floor therapy is, like what you provide in your office. I just think a lot of people don't know about pelvic floor therapy. I surely had no clue until I started coming. So kind of just let everyone know what that looks like and who could benefit from this.
Okay. So my name is Julie Lee. I am a physical therapist, and I treat women and men with pelvic pain or with issues going on with their pelvic floor system. So typically patients that we're seeing are either new moms that have just had a baby, and we're trying to get them back to doing all the things that they want to do after having their kiddo without leaking urine, without having pain, without having that like new mom adjustment period. We treat women during their pregnancy, and we treat men, and we treat people that have never had a baby as well that are dealing with. So everyone has a pelvic floor, and it is kind of the hub or like the central portion of our system. And so if you're having issues with your pelvic floor, it's not uncommon to then have hip pain or foot pain, or, you know, shoulder pain that can be related to the pelvic floor, because that's kind of where we are, our base of our core system there. So,
yeah. So I actually came into Julie because originally I had foot pain and we thought my foot was broken. And then come to find out, it really all stemmed from my pelvic floor. It was affecting my piriformis. It was affecting this like pain in my back I had had since having baby Shane. And it was just like all these things that I did not even realize we're connected to the pelvic floor. I feel like every time we talk, I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense why this is hurting or why I'm feeling this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to nerves a lot. And your nerves originate in your spine from your neck all the way down to your tailbone. And the bottom third of your spine is your pelvis, really. And so all of those nerves that kind of come out in that area, they innervate your pelvic floor, or they talk to your pelvic floor, they talk to your legs, your feet, your GI system, your bladder system, your like all of the systems that are in our gut area are all related to the pelvic floor. So,
well, and I think you said something that like everyone's going to be kind of shocked about. Like, I didn't know that like when sneezing and then peeing is not supposed to be normal, or like laughing and then peeing, like leakage, like these are things that actually can be like worked on and improved.
Yeah, it's super common. Women and men for that matter that have never had babies or that have had babies come in all the time. And their comment is, you know, one of the questions I ask during my intakes is, do you leak urine? Mm-hmm. And the answer is almost always, well, only with exercise, as if it's okay, but it's not normal. But it is a very common thing that we see. But leaking urine with squatting, with jumping, with sneezing, coughing, laughing, all of the things is never, ever normal. And if that's something you're dealing with, a pelvic floor therapist is the person that is going to help you with that. We're not going to give you medications because you don't need that. You need to either strengthen or lengthen your pelvic floor, depending on what your kind of situation is.
Yay. I think a lot of people are going to be shocked by that, truthfully, because it was just like a society norm that this is like just what happens after you have a baby. Like, this is your life. And so it's like nice to know that there's actually things out there that can kind of like fix this a little bit and help strengthen things. And I know I felt so much of a difference since I've been working with you. And I know I've been working with you for a couple years now, since before Chasen, I think, actually.
Yes.
So it's been a while now. And
yeah, I remember the day you came in and said, guess what? I'm pregnant. And
like, we were both surprised on that. So,
well, and it blows my mind that I am the first provider. I'm the first healthcare provider to tell women that yeah. concept, that no one else has told you that. Your OB, your primary care physician, you know, a chiropractor, none of them use that same wordage or frankly have the time to spend that little bit of extra time with you to kind of hone that concept in, that that's not a normal thing. While it might be happening and it might be common, it's not what you should be experiencing. So,
yeah, I know I've said to you so many times, I've learned so much that it's like so unfortunate that they're not teaching us about our bodies. And like, even coming in and having the pain I was having, it's because I couldn't breathe. Like, I remember you saying like your diaphragm doesn't move when you breathe. And I'm like, how does that even work? Not even knowing my diaphragm and pelvic floor, like reflect each other. And I just wonder how many women and men, but like for this group, women are like suffering for things that seriously could actually like be worked on and strengthened if they just had a little bit of education, like about their bodies, and they do not teach us that at all.
Well, and what you're often told is, well, are you doing your Kegels? And I don't know. I treat, you know, 20 patients a week, and I'm not sure I've ever given Kegels as an exercise. To sit at a stoplight and do 10 Kegels every time you go to a stoplight is not ever the intervention that I would give. I'm looking at, like you said, is your diaphragm moving? What's your posture look like? How are you managing your pressure? Meaning, are you bearing down with every time you lift your kiddo up or lift your purse up and things like that, and putting all that pressure right down on your pelvic floor? Are you standing with your tail tucked under and your pelvic floor is really tight all the time? So those are the things that I'm looking at. It's never, you're just weak, unless you're 95 years old and you sit in a wheelchair and you don't do anything. It's never that your pelvic floor is just too weak. It's usually something else is going along with it. There's an imbalance in there.
Right. Yeah. I know. I actually remember you telling me like, do not do Kegels, because you're like, you are not strong enough yet. We've got to strengthen this down here. Like, do not do it. So yeah, I've learned a lot. So I think we'll definitely, I think after people hear this, probably have to have you back and I'll actually be able to go live. Cause I know people are going to have like questions about that stuff too. So we've had a lot of discussion about endometriosis lately in the group, like tons of it. Of course, this month is endometriosis like awareness month. And so it kind of got brought up in the group. And I think people just like, I know, I don't know a lot about it. Like what it is, how do you know, you know, the difference? People are feeling frustrated. Their doctors aren't listening to them. So if you can kind of touch on what is endometriosis, how do we know if that's something we maybe have? And then like, what can we do to kind of like work through that? Cause we don't have to stay in the state of pain that we're in if we are diagnosed.
Yeah. I love working with patients with endometriosis. It's very rewarding, but everyone presents very differently. So endometriosis is when, tissue that is inside your uterus, or tissue that's similar to what we have normally inside of our uterus, sets up shop outside of the uterus. So it could be anywhere. It could be along your large intestine. It could be up near your bladder. It could be up in your heart. It could be in your brain even. It can be anywhere within the body. And I think that's a misconception that a lot of people think, that it is only right there around the uterus, but it's not. It's, in fact, what I see the most, frankly, is around your bowels and around your large intestine. So the only way to ultimately diagnose endometriosis is a surgery, a laparoscopic surgery, where they go in and they look at the endometrial tissue and they determine that it is, in fact, endometriosis. The way to cure it, and I would say there is not a cure necessarily, the gold standard treatment is an excision surgery, where a surgeon goes in and cuts the endometriosis out of your system. And so if it could be spread anywhere, it's got to be, he's got to look at your bowels, at your bladder, kind of all over the whole system to find out how it is affecting you. Like, each person is going to be very different. Right. So there's four stages, and I'm not 100% on what each one qualifies, but what I do know is that a stage one versus a stage four does not tell you like the severity. So someone might show up to me at a stage four and have 10 out of 10 terrible pain, especially around their periods, kind of that hormonal pain. And they're a stage four, but I could also see somebody who's a stage one with that same intensity of pain. So it does not really dictate that it has spread further necessarily, or that it's more intense pain at just stage four. So in PT, the question is, how can you help if there is no cure? We're not touching that endometrial tissue, but when our body has extra tissue outside of it, then we have that chronic pain and we have adhesions that develop, and adhesions are like sticky points within our organs, within our muscles, within our blood vessels, our nerves. And when our body gets stuck in different areas, I use kind of my hands to show this a lot. When our hands get, or when our tissues get stuck in different areas, then things don't move nice and smoothly like they should. Mm. And our body, that hurts, and our body protects. And when that happens, you know, often starting at a very young age, sometimes 12 years old, we're starting to see things like that, even younger. Then your body, every month that you have that cycle, your body protects and it guards and it goes into protection mode, and it almost overprotects. It does its job too well to protect you. And so we develop these patterns of holding. And so what we can do in therapy is find out, where is the pain originating from? Where are you actually just holding on tension in your abdomen, in your pelvic floor, in your back is a common area.
Yeah.
And we go in and we can release those tissues, and we can kind of retrain your nervous system to feel that it is hurting, but it's not hurtful to you, that you can relax those muscles, and we can kind of break up some of those adhesions. We can get the tissues moving better with one another, and really just a ton of pain relief from those monthly cycles that you have there.
Yeah. See, you know, I think that will be so good for people to know, because I know there are people in the group who've said they've had surgeries and it didn't do anything. Like, it was essentially a fail in a sense, because nothing changed. Or the opposite of, people don't feel like their doctors are listening to them, and they can't even get to a point, you know, of getting a diagnosis or a treatment or anything. So like, what would you say for people who are listening, who either have been the surgery route or they feel like they're not being heard? What would be the next step? Like, how can they get in with you? Like, what does that look like for them? You know?
Yeah. So to get in with me on my schedule, or one of my team schedules, you go on our website, or you could reach out to me as well, either on Facebook. I'm sure Joe can kind of provide my email address or something like that. And we can get you hooked up with an appointment. And we typically do an evaluation. So it's about 75 to 90 minutes long, your first visit. And we go through a big time detailed history of, what have periods always looked like for you? What does activity level look like you? If you are a mom, what did your birthing experiences and your pregnancies look like? And What does your day-to-day job look like? You know, are you sitting at a desk all day or are you working at a warehouse all day? Those are going to be very different presentations there. And then we're going to look at what is your chief complaint? Like, is it more abdominal pain? Is it more low back pain? Is it more cramps? Is it more just generalized pain? And try and figure out what the right game plan is for you based on what you present like. The biggest thing I tell people on should I jump into a surgery is, number one, find someone who specializes in endometriosis. In Indiana, that's hard, frankly. Indiana is a little behind the times on a lot of things, unfortunately.
A lot of things, that is for sure.
Yeah, so it's hard. But a good surgeon, let me say this a different way. A surgeon who knows endometriosis is not going to do a laparoscopic debridement. They're not just going to go in and try and suck all of that out. They're going to do an excision surgery. That is kind of gold standard for treatment of endometriosis right now. It's not a hysterectomy. And I think that's a misconception that we go in and we just take everything out, that endometriosis is going to go away. But I have 3 or 4 patients on my caseload right now that had the hysterectomy and they're still having their pain because, and it's unfortunate. And those are frustrated because that is a big old surgery and a big old recovery. And it's hard. And that's
changing.
Hard.
I mean, it's emotional. Changing. It's such an emotional journey.
Absolutely. It is. And then to have you say, well, that didn't change my pain at all.
Yeah.
But if we never change the body's response to the pain, we've changed the trigger, maybe, maybe depends on where that tissue was at. If it was in your brain, if it was in your heart, if it was somewhere else, your bowels, that tissue is still there. Your body's response to it has not changed. And so it's kind of deconditioning that body's response to the chronic pain. That's so important with that.
Wow. That is, even I feel like I've learned a lot. I'm sitting here like, oh my gosh, like I know since having Chasen, like my periods and stuff have just been a nightmare, like cramping after my period and cramping randomly in the middle of the month. And I'm like, okay, now I'm thinking like, where am I holding on to things at? Like,
you know,
so like when you talk about like the releasing, does this kind of come to like, you know, we do a lot of trigger points where you're releasing my trigger points and essentially teaching me how to breathe. Like I had to learn how to breathe and I thought I was breathing just fine, but like, I came to find out, like I was not at all. My first instinct is to be like, as soon as you give me any pain. So is that kind of like what it looks like as you're like doing this with patients?
Absolutely. My big goal is, and what I tell people is when I'm doing, so what you're referring to is like an internal pelvic floor release. So using one gloved digit to find and actually feel what your pelvic floor feels like and releasing it by pressing against it. I use what's called tomato touch. So not super hard, just that gentle pressure. And then I teach you, okay, find that spot in your awareness and breathe into it and melt it. And so my patient is actually doing the release. I'm not going in and manually releasing anything myself with force. It's more of a intrinsic letting go, and then an awareness of, oh, I didn't even realize I was holding that tension, right?
Yes.
We get that in our bellies a lot also, like kind of in our gut. And it's a, oh, I didn't even realize I was holding that tension in. And then, okay, how often are you doing that throughout your day? If every time, you know, your kids are driving you crazy, you're tightening your pelvic floor, can you become more aware of that? And can you release? Or every time I have cramps in my abdomen, we may not be able to change those cramps, but is our reaction to tense everything up or is our our reaction to breathe? And can that change? You have that little bit of a cramp that's a 2 out of 10 versus our reaction to it that is a 7 out of 10 in pain.
Right. So, I mean, even just I can say, cause like I obviously had Emmy and then Chasen, and it was like even my birthing experience was different because I learned how to breathe through that. And I used to think that people were kind of crazy when they talk about like breathing through pain. But like even now when I'm getting pain, I've I'm like, okay, wait a minute, like close my eyes, like, okay, whoo, take a deep breath. It changed even for me, like my whole birthing experience, which was really, really rough with Chasen, but I know would have been even worse had I like not learned to actually breathe. And just the education that I've learned with you has been like mind blowing to me.
Yeah. So,
like, oh my gosh. So I know a couple people, like a lot of people were asking, like, what are some basic exercises that like people could maybe do at home that are like safe to do, to kind of like strengthen their pelvic floor if like they can't get in right now, or they're not able, you know, whatever the situation is right now. Like, what are basic things they can kind of do to help with that?
So I would say before you do any strengthening, and if you're having pelvic pain, so that means pain with peeing, pooping, having sex, or severe cramps, strengthening would not be my jam for you. That would be put strengthening on hold. You're probably strong enough. You need to learn how to relax your pelvic floor. So I'm going to start with that. How do you relax your pelvic floor? I like a legs up a wall, and I use this with almost every patient that has tightness or pain in their pelvic floor. And I literally have them lay with their butt as close to the wall as they can. Their legs are up the wall, so they're resting against the wall and they're laying comfortably on their back. And I have them breathe. And when they take a big inhale, then I have them connect to, and I tell them, connect to your rectal opening on the inhale and feel it soften and feel it melt. And so that's a good starter point to connect your breath to your pelvic floor and work on lengthening it. And I usually tell people 2 to 5 minutes at night is usually a good time when things are settling down as a way to connect. So that's where I would start someone is, can you fully lengthen? Because it's kind of like, if I use this as an analogy a lot, if you can see, if this is your pelvic floor here, okay, and you're strengthening and you're working your pelvic floor, it's nice and strong and you can do heavy lifting with it, but you can do it in this range of motion. If your pelvic floor is shortened or tight, you don't know how to lengthen to work throughout the entire range of motion. And so you don't want to put 30-pound dumbbells in your hands and do weights only in this rep. You want to do weights all the way through. So that's step one is, can you fully lengthen your pelvic floor? And then can you squeeze your pelvic floor, the front and the back together? And what I mean by that, so if you sit in your chair, feet flat on the ground, and I want you to squeeze the muscles that you would if you were going to prevent pee from coming out. Those are your front muscles, just to put it simply. Now, I want you to squeeze the muscles that you would to prevent gas from coming out. Okay, those are your back muscles. In order to do a good Kegel or pelvic floor contraction, a well-rounded one, you want to squeeze the muscles in the front and the muscles in the back together concurrently. What I see, the pattern I see a lot is that we squeeze the back muscles only, and we squeeze those back muscles and we squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. Well, the ones in the front are the ones that stop pee from coming out. Those are the ones we need to get stronger, and we tend to not use those. So doing a well-rounded contraction rather than just squeezing the behind is the key. One particular exercise that I like, and I start a lot of people on this, is a bridge. So you're lying on your back with your knees bent with a ball right between your knees. And then you're going to lift your behind up to kind of as high as you can, and then back down. And that's kind of general, how do I get the muscles that are attaching to the pelvic floor and the pelvic floor to work? It's not just squeeze and release Kegel at the stoplights. Like I said, it's put it into function. Mm-hmm. A bridge kind of mimics squatting in a sense. You're using the same muscles when you do a bridge that you do when you're doing squatting or lifting. So that's where I generally start with people is, when you get to the top of that bridge, give yourself that well-rounded front and back pelvic floor contraction.
Right.
And when you come down, relax it, lengthen it, let that muscle go back to normal, if you will.
Okay? I think there are so many times I've done these too, and it seems so easy until you like go to do it. And I was like, holy crap. Like I am not where I need to be. And like, I love that you listed all those reasons, because I think sometimes people are like, you know, if they have a bowel movement, okay, like it does hurt, or it's pressure, it's normal. Like having sex, like, okay, like it just is what it is. Sometimes it's just uncomfortable. And like, I think it's important that if people hear anything from this, it's that all these things are not normal. Like they are not normal. You do not have to suffer through it. And there are things out there that can like help you learn your body. And I think if a lot of us just learned our body to begin with, like so many more things would be completely different.
Yeah. And you know, I tell people that if something doesn't feel right, trust your instinct. I say that to patients a lot, that you know your body, you really do. And so if sex is painful and you don't want it to be painful, then that's a problem. If bowel movements are painful, that's telling us a ton of information. And then, so then it becomes not just pelvic floor, what's your diet look like? Mm-hmm. How much activity are you getting? When are you eating? You know, there's a lot of variables that go into that. But putting that together, if having a bowel movement is painful or digesting food is painful, that could both be related to the pelvic floor also. If peeing is painful, or if you're leaking urine, or if you have to pee every 20 minutes, even if you drink a lot of water, if you are underage, I think it's 65 now, if you're under age 65 and you wake up at night to urinate specifically, that's not what we want. That's not our goal. Let's say that.
Yeah. And you know, that was one thing I definitely thought was normal. Cause even lately I've been like waking up at least once, which is better than I used to do. Cause it used to be like multiple times a night. And now it's like one time a night. So I mean, I just think there's so many misconceptions that society has like put out there of just accepting things as normal. And so I hope that when they see this recording, I have a feeling there's going to be more questions, which is why I'm like, oh, I'm so like mad that Zoom would not let me go live. But if you're open to coming back again, I definitely think there's going to be more questions, and I'm going to put all of your like information when I post this so people can either post more questions or email you or whatever, just to even get in for like an initial evaluation, just to have somebody that actually will hear them. And I think sometimes that is the most important thing. You just want to be heard and not told that you're freaking crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, and just to like, who do I go to for that issue? Mm-hmm. Bowel issues. That's a big one that people are like, I don't know who I should talk to, my OB. No, not really. She doesn't care what your bowels are doing. Really? Right.
Yeah.
Your primary care physician, their job is to delegate to where you should be. You know, a colorectal doctor, maybe, but maybe you don't feel like it's bad enough to go to that route, to go to the extreme of seeing a colorectal doctor. So a physical therapist kind of puts all of these things together. It seems weird that physical therapy is that person, but specifically a pelvic floor physical therapist does kind of treat that whole pelvic bowl and puts it all together for you. So.
Perfect. Well, is there anything else you want to share before we go about pelvic floor therapy or coming in or anything?
You know, the biggest thing that I would say, especially related to endometriosis, if you have been diagnosed and your doctor has said, we can do surgery, we can do birth control, we can try all of these options. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, there's physical therapy. Don't wait. Don't make it your last resort. I've had two patients in the last month that have dealt with endo issues, severe endometriosis issues for like 15 plus years, IVF, all kinds of things. And in 1 month's time, we've made some changes in their pain. So don't wait at all, because even just having a consult, it doesn't mean you're going to be seen 3 times a week for, you know, 6 weeks. It might mean that we see you for a visit or two, teach you some things, and then check in with you after some time, once you're kind of more independent in releasing those muscles. So that's the big thing, is don't wait to make an appointment. You'll be thrilled that you got started.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. So, well, thank you so much for joining us. I have a feeling that you'll be popular in our group, so hopefully you will come back to us.
Absolutely.
But I will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Thank y'all so much for listening to this interview. I hope that you were able to take something away from today. I hope that you were able to really, truly gain some insight into how important it is to educate yourself on your pelvic floor and how much your pelvic floor connects to the rest of your body, and that you just walk away from this conversation feeling hopeful. I want y'all to know that I will be linking Julie's information in the show notes and that you are not alone in your journey. I know that women's health is not talked about enough, and I know that as women, we are often brushed aside and we are not trusted when we tell doctors how we are feeling about our bodies. And I know that too often we are not listened to. But I want you to know that you are important and that I hear you, and you are important. You are valued. You are worthy no matter what journey you are on right now, my friends. In case no one has told you today, you are beautiful and you are loved. Empowered voices truly do make a difference, especially when it comes to topics like this. Please, please never forget just how much of a difference your voice can make. Please let it be heard.